John Lennon once sang, "Imagine there's no countries," and flying into the airport named after him, it isn't hard to do. There isn't a single passport check on the air route from Dublin to Liverpool, but the days of borderless travel between Ireland and the UK could be numbered, depending on what happens here in a week's time.
Tonight at 10, the Chancellor's latest warning that a vote to leave the EU...
Liverpool is a working-class city, typical of England's industrial north, and the opinions of voters in cities like this could well be decisive in next week's referendum on the UK's membership of the EU. That's why Enda Kenny is coming here this afternoon to speak to Irish voters, urging them to vote Remain. Also here today is the Labour leader, Brendan Howlan.
Of course, the European Union is not a perfect entity. We know that very clearly. We are critical of it. But neither is politics in Dublin or politics in Westminster, no more than they're perfect, neither is Brussels perfect. And we want to continue working with the United Kingdom to make it better.
It's an unprecedented step for Irish leaders to come to another country in the midst of an electoral battle. Speaking on the Anton Savage Show, UKIP leader Nigel Farage isn't sure it's a wise decision.
The more people who lead governments that tell us we must all stay part of the European Union, the more likely we are to stick two fingers up to them. This battle is the people versus the politicians. I don't think the British people like foreign leaders coming and telling them what to do.
The impact of a potential Brexit on Ireland would be huge, not least because it would mean tariffs with our biggest trading partner. But British government ministers are at odds on whether a physical border would have to return between the Republic and the North. Conor McGinn is a Labour MP for St Helens in Merseyside, but he's originally from just outside Newry. He says any vote for hard borders is a step too far.
Those who are campaigning for Britain to leave the EU can't answer the questions about what would happen after. And for the British public, for people across the UK as a whole, and for relations between Ireland and Britain, don't know is not good enough.
This vote is now on a knife edge. A telephone poll for the Evening Standard today shows that when undecideds are removed, 53% of voters back Brexit, the first time it's held a lead in those polls. It means the votes of 350,000 Irish citizens in the UK could be crucial, and what happens here in Liverpool in a week's time could be felt for decades to come. Gavin Riley, Today FM News, Liverpool.
And starts to put the wheels of Brexit in motion as well. So it could be an interesting week.
I'm told he has arrived at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting a mere 7 minutes late.
Matt, he has tweeted in the last seconds, and I'm going to read out the full thing because it's a very brief statement.
Okay.
Last year, I indicated that I would not lead the Fine Gael Party into the next general election. I have decided to implement that decision today. Therefore, I will retire as leader of Fine Gael effective from midnight tonight, May 17th. I will continue to carry out my duties as party leader in an acting capacity until my successor is elected through the Fine Gael leadership process. I've asked that the Fine Gael Executive Council expedite this process and have it concluded by close of business on Friday the 2nd of June. I want to assure people throughout this internal process I will continue to carry out my duties in full. I intend to provide a brief but appropriate period for my successor to engage with groups and members supportive of government. And it goes on then to thank his constituents, the people who have elected him to the Dáil 11 times, his personal staff, his wife, his children, his siblings and their families for all of his work. But confirmation from Enda Kenny, he will step down as leader effective from midnight tonight and wants to have a new leader in place by the close of business on Friday the 2nd of June.
That's a tighter timetable than I...
The extraordinary claims were made under Dáil privilege this lunchtime by the Labour leader, Brendan Howlan, who said he had concern about Noreen O'Sullivan being allowed to stay as Garda Commissioner while the claims of a smear campaign are looked at. He said this morning he had been contacted by a journalist.
The journalist told me that they have direct knowledge of calls made by the Garda Commissioner to journalists during 2013 and 2014, in the course of which the Commissioner made very serious allegations of sexual crimes having been committed by Garda Maurice McCabe.
TDs were openly shocked as Howlan said the same journalist was prepared to give testimony under oath at the Charlton Commission, which is now being set up. Enda Kenny said the claims were of the most serious import, but that the claims of a smear campaign against whistleblowers have not been established.
What is at issue here is a series of allegations, the truth of which have not been tested yet, and which I can tell the House are wholly and vehemently denied by those against whom the allegations are made.
Howlan said, however, that the Commissioner should be forced to stand aside.
In the normal course of events, when there are serious issues of this that go to the heart of the administration of justice in our state, people will be asked to stand aside. without any predetermination of outcome.
That, however, seems unlikely while the terms of reference for the inquiry are published this afternoon. Some concern has emerged that other whistleblowers, who claims were not given a preliminary examination, are being left out. Independent TD Mick Wallace has heard those claims too.
Keith Harrison and Nick Kehoe are perfect examples that once they put their head above the parapet, once they made complaints to the authorities, complaints were made about them. Investigations were initiated against them. I mean, it was like a witch hunt.
Sinn Féin shares those concerns and hope they might be able to get the terms of reference amended in the Dáil. Gavin Riley, Today FM News, Leinster House.
Enda Kenny is set to tell TDs this afternoon that he could step down as Taoiseach within 2 months. Kenny's due to finally reveal his plans for his future at a meeting of Fine Gael TDs and senators this evening, but he still faces the prospect of a motion of no confidence, depending on how long he intends to remain in place. Our political correspondent Gavin Riley joins me now in studio. Gavin, do we have any indication yet as to what Enda Kenny might actually say this evening?
We don't, Susan. We're still very much in the dark about his plans, and again in the Dáil in the last hour there was absolutely no signal at all given from Enda Kenny as to what he might be planning, and that is after he rebuffed questions yesterday in both the Dáil chamber and at the cabinet table. So it seems as for now as only a handful of confidants actually have any idea as to what he might be planning. Now the general indications are that he will announce some plans to step down, although in fact he hasn't given any public indication yet at all, so we don't know for sure if that is what he intends to do. But what we are hearing is that he won't give a specific date for his departure. The idea behind that is that if he gave a specific date, then the value of his meetings in the White House or in Brussels coming up in the next few weeks would be diminished because the other parties would know that he was a bit of a lame duck. So TDs may have to read between the lines a little bit to get some indication of when Kenny is standing down, but he is expected to get the process going once he's back from the White House next month.
And will everyone...
By his own admission, John Halligan has never been all that comfortable in government alongside Fine Gael, but the ongoing row over the future of cardiac care at University Hospital Waterford is threatening to bring his brief ministerial tenure to an end. He had expected a clinical review of services to recommend the opening of a second cath lab to offer 24-hour cardiac service for the region, but the review doesn't do that and even suggests perhaps moving some services to Cork. Halligan told WLRFM that's not what he was promised.
Michael Noonan said, look John, this review is only a formality. Fine Gael cannot be seen to be doing political favours for anybody, so the cath lab will be delivered. Simon Coveney said during the negotiations, well John, if you don't sign up and if you don't agree to this, we will deliver the second cath lab for Waterford anyway.
For his part, Health Minister Simon Harris says he is prepared to consider extending the hours at the existing lab, but he says he can't authorise a second one against advice.
No matter how many times I talk to people, I can't magic up a clinical commitment to a second cath lab, when quite simply I have an independent external report that says such a second cath lab currently is not required.
John Halligan says that's not good enough, and he believes Fine Gael is now backing out of a commitment in the programme for government.
I gave a commitment not to bring down the government on votes of confidence or on budgetary matters or on the programme for government. They are doing the opposite. I signed up to the programme for government for Waterford based on what they had agreed with me. Now they are now breaking that commitment.
Halligan is today meeting consultants from the hospital to see what they can make of the findings and whether they can accept them. If they can't, he says he'll have no option but to resign.
Well, I'll have to if they don't deliver something that the consultants and the people of Waterford want. So what choice will I have?
The old song is true. John Halligan will have trouble if he stays, and if he goes, the choice will be far from easy. So you gotta let me know. Gavin Riley, Today FM News. Should I stay or should I go?
He congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard.
President-elect Donald J. Trump addressing supporters at a rally in New York City a short time ago. President Trump has urged the country to come together. He's been declared the winner of a shock election after Hillary Clinton called him to concede. Our political correspondent Gavin Riley reports.
Right now, a historic moment. We can now project the winner of the presidential race, CNN projects.
It's a victory that few could believe and even fewer could see coming. But in the last half hour, Donald Trump has won enough states and enough electoral votes to become the 45th president of the United States. It's a stunning upset fueled by breakthrough wins in swing states like Ohio, Pennsylvania and Florida. The president-elect spoke just moments ago.
Hillary has worked
very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely. Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. Have to get together.
The developments came just minutes after Clinton's chairman, John Podesta, told supporters to go home and get rest after a long night.
Every vote should count. Several states are too close to call, so we're not going to have anything more to say tonight.
But Donald Trump has now confirmed that Hillary Clinton has called him to concede. He's addressing supporters in the Hilton in Midtown now, declaring himself the 45th president. He'll also take office over a Republican Congress with control of both the House and the Senate. Gavin Riley, Today FM News. Donald Trump described Enda and Fionnuala Kenny as great people as he welcomed them to the White House last night, the second time of the day. Inside, however, the Taoiseach offered a clearly loaded speech, making the case for the 50,000 illegal Irish here to be looked upon kindly.
He too, of course, was an immigrant. And though he is, of course, the patron saint of Ireland for many people around the globe, he's also a symbol of, indeed, the patron of immigrants.
Trump, for his own part, recognised the Irish were known as fighters, and they'd continue to do so.
With their grit and their bravery and their courage, earning the nickname the Fighting Irish. And I know a lot about the Irish. They fight. They are tough. I know a lot. I know more than I'm ever going to tell you.
Today, the Taoiseach heads for New York, where he'll march in one of the oldest parades in the world. Gavin Riley, Today FM News at the White House.
The harassment laws we have right now were written in 1997, which, as people remember, is basically a time when even text messaging was only really getting off the ground. That basically the only communications you had then were face-to-face or by picking up a telephone. And obviously communication has changed massively in the 20 years since then. That not only do we have text and emails becoming much more prevalent, but even strictly speaking, text messaging is covered under previous harassment laws, but other messaging like Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or Telegram or even technically an Apple iMessage, technically speaking, that might not actually count as communications under the existing law, which means that if you send someone a text message which is abusive or effectively if you're stalking them by text, that would be illegal. But if you're sending them like abusive Facebook Messenger messages or on WhatsApp,
that's not covered.
So what the other thing that Labour are trying to do is to like dramatically expand the definition of communication so that it doesn't just say phone calls or text messages, that it's basically any kind of contact between person A and person B, and it doesn't matter what app or what tool or whatever that they use to actually do it.
Presumably there must.
Hello. Are you well?
Thank you very much. I'm still alive.
Anyway. Nice to see you again.
We've been quite busy.
In decades past, the idea of a former IRA commander speaking so freely with Queen Elizabeth would have boggled the mind. But such was the journey travelled by Martin McGuinness, from paramilitary to peacemaker, from subversive to statesman. He was born far from such diplomacy. Born and raised in the bogside of Derry, an underprivileged part of an underprivileged city, an Irish nationalist in a British state. As a teen, Martin McGuinness became active in the Provisional IRA and quickly rose through its ranks, second in command of the Derry Brigade at 21 on Bloody Sunday.
We don't believe that winning elections and winning any amount of votes will bring freedom in Ireland. At the end of the day, it will be the cutting edge of the IRA which will bring freedom.
But after prison terms in the Republic for IRA membership and possession of explosives, McGuinness claimed to have left the IRA. And as Sinn Féin embraced the ballot box, McGuinness became more of a pragmatist. He was a back channel to Britain during the 1981 hunger strikes and became Sinn Féin's chief negotiator. In 1998, those negotiations resulted in Good Friday and power sharing with unionists.
Good luck. Have a happy Easter. God bless all the people of Northern Ireland.
Former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, also a part of those talks, says McGuinness took great risks by turning his back on violence.
He became a huge critic of those that wanted to be involved in dissident republicanism, spoke out stronger than anybody against that, which was huge bravery. Yes, he was involved in the violence and the troubles, but he moved all the way to a democratic political leader.
And even those who fell victim to IRA violence, like Colin Parry, whose son Tim died in the 1993 Warrington bombing, believed McGuinness's ultimate goal was peace.
I don't forgive Martin, I don't forgive the IRA, nor does my wife, nor do my children. But setting aside forgiveness, the fact, simple fact is, I found Martin McGuinness an easy and pleasant man to talk to. a man who I believe was sincere in his desire for peace and maintaining the peace process.
Under Good Friday, McGuinness became Education Minister. In 2007, with Sinn Féin rising in the polls, he became Deputy First Minister, alongside his most formidable foe.
As for Ian Paisley, I want to wish you all the best as we step forward towards the greatest yet most exciting challenge of our lives.
But McGuinness and Paisley became unlikely friends, dubbed the Chuckle Brothers. And after Paisley moved on, a more mellow McGuinness set his sights on the presidency of Ireland.
I have the ability to work with anybody, as I've proved, in working with Ian Paisley and Peter Robinson and many others. I value our unionist brothers and sisters, and I hope to bring to all of that.
In 2011, he came a creditable third in a strong field of seven candidates. But returning to Stormont, he never rekindled Paisley's friendship with Peter Robinson or Arlene Foster. And when the latter refused to step down earlier this year over the controversial Cash for Ash scheme, a visibly frail McGuinness, by then diagnosed with amyloidosis, pulled the plug.
Does the DUP think this will be a return to the status quo? There will be no return to the status quo, except on terms that are acceptable to Sinn Féin.
Not everyone will forgive Martin McGuinness for his paramilitary past, but he will be more keenly remembered as someone who put that life behind him and who desperately wanted power sharing to work.
My journey has been a long journey. I've been over 25 years working on building the peace.
Someone who even went so far as to shake hands with the Queen.
Good, went really well.
Gavin Riley, Today FM News.
I'm still a Republican.